As Lord Brahma said, as we heard Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he said there's nobody whose fortune is the same as the good fortune of the residents of Vrindavan, and he particularly glorified the cowherd boys of Vrindavan because he was there in all of his opulence and his power as the supreme person in the universe, and he saw what they were doing, and it was inconceivable to him because he was there ready to offer the most wonderful, eloquent prayers glorifying the supreme power of the supreme. I cannot understand your form. Your strength is unlimited. You are unlimited in this way and that way and so on and so forth. You are so great. I have to stand here with my hands folded like this. And if you look in the little dioramas, you'll see that Prahlad Maharaj is standing with his hands folded like this. And Rupa Maharaj is also standing with his hands folded like this. And in the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, he describes that you are the inexhaustible absolute truth. You are the Brahman, you are the Paramatma in everyone's heart. You are the supreme personality. And Dhruva Maharaj, as we heard yesterday, explained the same thing. But here is a little comment from the Hari Bhakti Sudanaya of how Lord Nrisingadev spoke to Prahlad. When Lord Nrisingadev appeared, he placed you on his lap like a mother and patted and embraced you, put his hand on your head and licked you. He was so intimate and loving. It is not that those who know the Lord's greatness have no affection and love. It is not that it is exactly either or. But to the degree that you're conscious of the greatness of a person is the degree that you'll be on your best behavior. And therefore you'll have your hands like this. And you'll show your best side, right? You won't want them to see you doing anything that's a faulty. You'll make sure that everything is just perfectly right. But Lord Nrisingadev says to Prahlad, "My dear child, please give up this attitude of fearful respect that your reverence towards me has produced in you. I do not so much like this sentiment in my devotees. Instead, just feel free to express your love for me. When a devotee looks at me without hesitation and speaks to me affectionately, my pleasure grows with every new moment. Although I am eternally free from all limitations, such behavior binds me with the ropes of love. Although I am unconquerable, my devotee can conquer me. Although I am subject to no one's control, I become their subordinate subject. I belong only to him who has shown his love for me by giving up all affection for family and possessions, and such a devotee also belongs to me. Neither he nor I have any other true friend. My desires are always automatically fulfilled, but I take various births in this world just to bestow on my devotees the satisfaction of all their desires. So please tell me, what would you like from me?" And this is, we're going now to Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, as you see the small quote above the displays, Prahlad Maharaj's desire was simple. "Please, I don't want to have any material desires in my heart." That was his wish. That was his first wish. And when asked again, "Please, let me give you something. Yes, you already have that. What can I give you?" He said, I don't need anything. I just wish that wherever I am, I can think of you peacefully and happily." And then Lord Nrisingadev told him, "You take the kingdom. You accept the kingdom." He had no interest, but he said, "You accept the kingdom for the benefit of others. And this brings up a desire that Prahlad Maharaj did have. He did have a desire in his heart, and that was to benefit others. So he accepted the kingdom in that mood, and he used all the opulence and everything that his father was using for his personal enjoyment. He used everything for the pleasure of Lord Nrisingadev and for the benefit of others. So he agreed to assume the throne to help to deliver the people. And he used his father's vast wealth for preaching. If he could arrange for deliverance of the universe, he thought, this might satisfy the Lord. But still, he is thinking, the Lord. He is Lord. I am his servant. There is love there. But it is restrained by a reverence. He's the Lord. He's my Lord. But now we have to have a little look at the cowherd boys to see, to quantify why they are actually so great. The cowherd voice of Vrindavan, when I was trying to find some pastime to share with you, which pastime should we speak of, I found a very nice chapter, and ironically, or by chance, not by chance, perhaps by Krishna's arrangement, it was the same section just before that my husband was speaking about. So our whole subject matter linked together very nicely, although it was totally independent of each other. So I found a pastime of Agasura, and if you look in the Krishna book or the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll see that there's a very famous verse at the beginning of that chapter, which describes the cowherd boys. They had such pious credits. They had krita punya punyam. They had, like you could say, unlimited good fortune. They had worked, they had developed over a long time the pious credits to be able to play with Krishna in the way that they were doing. So yesterday the subject matter came up that it takes many lives to learn to play a sitar, or it takes many lives to become a very qualified businessman that has no money, only his cloth, and he can look around in a city and he can become immediately rich because he's been doing that for so many lives. So he knows just what to do, just where to go. He's expert. It takes many lives to become expert at something. So mostly what people do, this is the sudra mentality, as Srila Prabhupada one time explained, is they hanker and they lament. This is the symptoms of a sudra. They hanker for something. I wish I had that. When they get it, they think, I don't like this. Oh, I wish I had that. And then if I, that's no use, I wish I had that. And so they go like this, and so the valuable energy of their life is spent like this. I want that. Get it? No, I don't want that. Oh, I want this. Oh, okay, I've got that. No, I don't. No, that's not so good. I want one of these. And they flicker from place to place to place. And so instead of concentrating their energy, their focus, their mind, their senses, their intelligence, in one way being, what's that called? Yes. Instead of being single-pointed in what they want, generally the mind goes like this, like that, like this, like that, everywhere. And at the end of one's life, one has got to did a little of this and tried that, didn't like that, did this. And then that's their life gone. And their energy, you could say, in a sense, if you had a sort of a quantum idea, they got about that much out of everything. They spread very thin over a lot of things. Their mind wandered here and there in many places. And so what have they got at the end of their life? Nothing very concentrated, nothing very intense, nothing very demanding that's going to target them and push them to their next birth. They may take birth like this, they may do this, they may do that. No one's really sure. But when you see somebody who's found something that they want, then they work very hard for one thing. If somebody decides, I want to be a millionaire, then they put all of their effort into that. And if someone's going to be successful, they have to work constantly. They don't have to work all the time in a torturous way, but they have to keep themselves in the same direction. And then they will achieve a quantum, an intense amount of something. So people who have become masters, they have done this over many births. And we should understand as Krishna's devotees that it may also take us many births. And we may say, no, but Srila Prabhupada said one birth, and we can all just, we will all be off out of here, just in a bit of a hurry, because it's actually quite unhappy and miserable to be here. So we will just sort of all be finished with all of this. And then you ask, so what will you do then? Well, I will enjoy. Oh, you'll enjoy? Oh, you still have the same mentality? So where will you go? You'll have to go higher. You can go to the heavenly planets. There you can enjoy the mode of goodness fully. You can enjoy family life in a very exotic, loving way. Or you can go higher than that. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it tells you what is at every level of the universe, what you can attain. Or if you want this, go there. If you want that, you can have it here. So whatever we want, whatever is in our heart, we can go up, 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 as we can go up in this world. We can go up in the whole universe, up in the whole material creation. But to go there, to go to where Krishna is playing with the cowherd boys, to do that is something different. There we have to learn how to love him. We have to learn how to want his pleasure, not our pleasure. So I will read some sections from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, some comments from there, and then I will read some of the pastime. And you can see that when we hear about the cowherd boys, as my husband said, they sound rather common. And if one doesn't actually have this proper understanding of Krishna, you think, well, these are just stories. You know, like you read little stories to your children when they're going to bed. Here's another little story you can read. And factually, for myself, having children who grew up in Krishna consciousness, I did read them all the Krishna book. And I did at some time think, these are like children's stories. Because I read them to them when they were little. I showed them its plays in school. I did them as puppet shows. And after a while you think, I know these stories. I can even just quickly repeat a story. They're not so extraordinary. This sense that this is extraordinary is a special blessing from Krishna, if you can understand this. So first of all, to understand how extraordinary they are, you have to understand the greatness of Krishna. Then when you understand how powerful and how great he is, then if that comes, if that settles into your mind, you can understand that he's competent to take care of me. Here, in this world, as I want, as I need, in this world, he can take care of me. He's powerful enough. I should get his help. I should seek his shelter. But what he does, as we're saying, beyond the controller, beyond this universe, how he enjoys himself, I should then also investigate this to find out more about him. So here are some quotes from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that I found that were relevant to this subject. This is Narada Muni speaking. So Narada, as we've seen, he instructed Prahlad. And Narada also instructed Dhruva. And now Narada, in this book called Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Srila Sanatana Goswami, he's instructing one small Gopa Kumar. A Gopa, what's Gopa Kumar mean? He's a young cowherd boy, Gopa Kumar. And this young cowherd boy, he is, by the power of his guru, has given him a mantra, and he chants his mantra, and he's seeking his perfection. And he's born in Govardhan, here on this, in this world. And by chanting very, very faithfully his mantra, which is a Gopa mantra, because he's a cowherd boy, he has attained more and more elevated states. And as he goes higher and higher and higher, in each place he goes, he likes it at first very much and finds it very interesting. And he sees the Lord there and he worships him in the form that he appears in this place. But after some time, he feels restless again and thinks, actually, this isn't what I want. I'm a gopa. I'm a cowherd boy. And he realizes that his cowherd boy nature can't be satisfied by this particular incarnation of the Lord to whom he has come to see. And so by chanting his mantra and chanting his mantra, he goes higher. This is a form that Sanatana Goswami has given us, so that we can understand what this material world, the whole material world, what it has to offer us. So then by chanting his mantra, eventually he leaves the material world and enters into the spiritual world. And he goes to Vaikuntha Lok. And in Vaikuntha, when he arrives, he sees the Lord of Vaikuntha, Vaikunthanath. And Lord Narayan, he manifests a form as a cowherd boy to satisfy the yearning in the heart of Gop Kumar. So he runs to him with his flute in his hand. And he says, oh, and he puts his arms around him and he wants to feed him something, give him one of his laddus. And he's so intimate and friendly with him. But Lakshmi comes. She goes, wait. And he wants to sit there and tell jokes, you know, and sit beside him, put his arm around him. But this is Narayan. Narayan doesn't. And Lakshmi says, Narayan, you know, he has to go to bed now. You go. And she shoos him away. And people try to sort of accommodate his unconventional behavior. Because he's very relaxed and he wants to just share this kind of intimacy. But in Vaikuntha, everyone has four arms and they're always offering prayers to the Lord. And they think in Vaikuntha, because of their love for Narayan, they think that occasionally he has this manifests this form in Vrindavan for his own reasons. We cannot understand this Vrindavan mood. But please, you know, fold your hands before the Lord, you know, and put your flute away. And so he goes from there. After a while, he meets Narada, comes there and sees him. He's not happy there. He says, I've never seen anyone in Vaikuntha who is not happy. In Vaikuntha means you're in the spiritual world. But what is this? You're restless and as if you were anywhere else. So he tells him things. And he tells him, why don't you go instead to Ayodhya? He takes him through various levels. He says, you go and see Lord Ram. He's more congenial for your purposes. He will take care of you. And he said, and if you don't fit in there, if you can't be peaceful with Lord Ram, then Lord Ram will quickly send you on. So he goes to Ayodhya, he feels better. Lord Ram is more, he's more personable. You know, he has brothers. Narayan has no mother, father, only Lakshmi Narayan. He has brothers, he has all the monkeys are there, and so he feels fits in for a little while. And again he feels, no, this isn't what I'm looking for. This isn't what I'm really looking for. And so then Lord Ram indicates, why don't you go to Dwarka? So he travels by his good fortune and his chanting. He arrives in Dwarka. And there he sees all the residents of Dwarka in their beautiful opulent clothes with their gold necklaces and their bangles and so forth. And they're coming to see Lord Vasudev Krishna. Vasudev Krishna sometimes manifesting four arms. And when he first arrives again, he thinks, yes, this is what I was looking for. And there he is. He goes to the assembly house, but Lord Vasudev Krishna sits up on a throne and instructs all the Yadavas. And here he is, and he's got his little flute and his little plain, simple cowboy white costume. And they all say to him, why don't you change your dress? You know, like upgrade a little bit. You know, you need a few bangles. And, you know, you could wear a little crown. You could look a little more, you know, like we're, you know, Dwarka is an opulent place. You know, this is the Lord's opulent manifestation here. But he can't. It's not his nature to do this. It's not natural for him. So he says, even though they instructed me to do, I didn't. And I stayed at the house of Uddhava. And the reason I was happy with Uddhava was because Uddhava had been to Vrindavan. He understood. So then Narada comes and he says to him, look at you, you're still here, you're not happy. And he's there with his little flute and he's not happy. And then he starts to tell him, he starts to give him the instructions that are going to lead him to his final destination, which of course is the place in the spiritual world where he was born in the beginning. This is Govardhan. He says to him, one can never achieve such pure love for the personality of Godhead by concentrating on his supreme power. Because in that mood, one invariably feels fear and reverence. So this is the point. He says, one achieves that love only by thinking of the Lord as one's ordinary dear friend. That love is higher than found in the material worlds and the outer coverings of the universe, and higher than in the spiritual kingdom beyond. And the comment is, only by considering Krishna one's lifelong friend in one of the spiritual relationships can a devotee rise to the level of pure love known only in Vraj. This type of love, it's not cheap. When you think Krishna's my friend here, you think, Krishna, you're my ordinary friend. We already think like that. Give me this, give me that, I want this. But that means we don't know what friendship really is. We think friendship is meant, I give you something, you give me something. That's friendship. So he's provide for me here, for my family, for my environment, for me. He should give me. But this isn't love. The love of the residents of Vrindavan is so extraordinary because they manifest all the same kind of characteristics that you see here. They play, the boys play in the same way. The girls dress up in the same way. But everything they do, every atom of their consciousness has become dedicated to pleasing Krishna. So this is the difference between the Krishna book and any kind of little nursery type stories that you can read that are kind of cute and pleasant and entertaining. The residents of Vrindavan are different. They have given 100% everything to Krishna. So what can we do? How can we gain this? We can gain this, as I said, by many births, or the aspiration that it may take me many, many, many lifetimes to get to this point. I don't even have the beginning of an understanding of what this would be like. I'm quite fixed in my selfishness. You can't even take even a pinch away from how selfish I am. If I do something kind for somebody, I see that I do it because it makes me feel happy. So therefore, I'm doing yes for you, but actually it's for me. And if your needs are interfering with my happiness, well, I'll have to think about that for a moment or two. Because, you know, the main thing is I have to be, you know, my well-being has to be considered. So therefore, here we are like this, and they are like that. And so this process takes many, many, many lives. But Srila Prabhupada explains, and he explains, it is very difficult. But he gives us a hope. He says that by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy and the power of the holy names of the Lord, the acceleration of our bhakti can be enormous. It can take what would take hundreds and hundreds of lives, can be done if one focuses, one is determined, can be done in a very, very short time. But this can't be done just by a mechanical process, because love and mechanical process are different. Love means giving something of oneself for the pleasure of another. I'll read another quote. Just as the pure way they behave towards Krishna always confirms their ecstatic mentality, so the way he behaves towards every, so does the way he behaves towards every one of them. There is never even a trace of duplicity in the loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees in Gokul. Their dealings are vishuddha, or absolutely pure. It is not that Krishna truly loves only one of his devotees. With everyone and with everyone else, he only pretends. He loves them all. He loves them all so much that when Lord Brahma comes and he takes away the cowherd boys, for 1 year Krishna is imitating every one of those cowherd boys. Why? The external reason is so that the cowherd men and women will not die of the great loss of their family, because this was what was possible, that when losing later on, I think it is Agasura thinks, if I kill all the boys, the families will die because they're so attached to their children that the mothers and fathers will also die. I will kill the children and kill everyone. So Krishna is thinking they're so attached to their children. I should imitate the form of every one of their children and go and be in their household. But the intimate reason why Krishna did that was so that every one of the mothers of all the cowherd boys, they all loved Krishna foremost. No matter how much they loved their children, they loved Krishna more. So everyone got to be Krishna's mother directly for that one whole year. And all the cows, the calves, were Krishna themselves. And so Krishna himself as the calves, all the cows, got to feed Krishna their milk, which was what they always wanted to do. They loved Krishna so dearly. So Krishna in this way is capable of fulfilling and satisfying the hearts of everyone. Everyone, even ourselves, what to speak of all the residents of Vrindavan. Now here we hear that Krishna, he hardly even noticed when his eldest son Brahma came before him and was offering him prayers. This is Brahma's prayers. When he was offering these prayers to the Lord, they're so exalted prayers that they're quoted by acharyas, Vaishnava acharyas everywhere, because of the profound nature of Lord Brahma's words. But Krishna, he didn't really, he wasn't very interested. In Vrindavan, Krishna gives himself entirely to his dear friends and his family. So when great demigods and sages come to visit, he hardly pays them any attention. After Brahma was defeated in his attempt to steal the boys and calves and humbly approached Krishna to beg forgiveness, Krishna wasn't even interested in looking at him. What to speak of acknowledging his eloquent prayers or starting a conversation with him. Now you look in the Krishna book, it's quite striking that there's Indra full of anger and envy and pride, and he wants to kill everyone. If somebody came in here and wanted to kill everyone, and somebody else came in just before and they wanted to take half the people and hide them somewhere, who would you think was the greater criminal? The person who comes in with a gun, of course, and wants to kill everyone. Yet, Krishna was prepared to talk to Indra and to forgive Indra. But after Lord Brahma offered these beautiful, eloquent prayers, if you look in the Krishna book, what did Krishna say? What did he say? Nothing. He said nothing. Lord Brahma stood there. Can you imagine if you came to somebody, you'd done something, it wasn't that bad, played a trick on them, and you say, I'm really sorry, and then you do everything in your power to get them to forgive you with all of your, totally repentant, I'm so sorry, and this and this and this, and glorify them, and they say nothing. They don't look at you, they say nothing. And then you start saying, well, I think it's time for me to go. Please excuse me. I've got another appointment, I think. And you want to get out of there as quickly as possible. That's what Lord Brahma did. He wanted to get out there very, very quickly. I don't think I should interfere with your pastimes any longer. I should leave. Later, after Indra tried to destroy Vrindavan, and then came with a Sarabi cow to apologize to Krishna, Krishna chose to speak to him only because Indra was terrified of losing his post. And another reason is because Indra had brought with him the Lord, he had brought Sarabi with him. He'd brought somebody who Krishna really loved. It was cows. Because Krishna loves cows. So he was very intelligent. He bought Sarabi, the heavenly cow. And he said, please you go in front. You're like my auntie. You go in front and you please make everything all right. And then Sarabi said, I think that Indra, he is called Indra, that means he is the master. But I think that you should be our Indra. Not him. He just tried to kill us all. So we do not actually want him as our master. We want you. You should become the master of all the cows. So what was the name that they gave Krishna? What did Sarabi say Krishna's new name was? Govinda. So to get this name, Govinda, which is such a dear name to the devotees, Govinda, the master of the senses, the master of the cows. So for this purpose, Krishna was willing to talk to Indra. Yes, I'll talk to you a little bit. And here's Narada speaking about himself. He says, now he's speaking with great humility, but Narada is saying, not even for a moment is Krishna keen to talk with persons like me, whose only goal in life is his lotus feet. Indeed, that romantic hero of the cowherds is enchanted by some forest dwellers. He's speaking about the residents of Vrindavan who know all sorts of herbs and mantras. So he says, Krishna might not care much about demigods with official status like Brahma, but what about Narada, who is a simple devotee with no material position? Narada has no shelter other than Krishna, yet he laments that Krishna is too busy with the Vrajavasis even to say hello to him. What to speak of offering the proper greetings for a respectable sage? Narada's jealousy impels him to suspect that the Vrajavasis are controlling Krishna with herbs and mantras. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, of course, can never succumb to such material influences. But Narada, in his ecstasy, so this is not real jealousy, but this is his mood of love. In his ecstasy, he is thinking like that. The only power that can subdue Krishna is the Vrajavasis' pure love. So these are the saintly sons, the sons of the cowherd women who play daily with Krishna. Here is another verse. Once one has overcome the obstacles on the path that arise from frailties, what did we hear yesterday? There were weaknesses of heart that are stopping us from our devotional advancement. So there are three things that are considered difficult impediments in spiritual life. One is fear, because we fear, I don't think I can, I think I will stay back. And the other one is envy, and the other one is shyness. Imagine that, because the Vedic culture is all about becoming chaste and shy and very, but the residents in Vrindavan aren't shy. They are not shy with Krishna. They don't think, oh, because shyness is like, oh, it might, you know, he might be upset with me, I should just be. It appears like a very good quality, but not so in Vrindavan. But particularly here we'll hear about the frailty of fear. Once one has overcome the obstacles on the path that arise from frailties like fear, one can then achieve pure love, in which one thinks of the Lord like a close friend in the ordinary world. For this, one must have a strong desire to serve the Lord in the manner of his gopas or gopis. So to have this intimacy, one time I remember I was in a class and the speaker said that if you want to worship God, this is in the Vedic context, you can worship him as Lakshmi Narayan. But if you want more intimacy than that, then you have to approach Krishna. So I was thinking as an audience in the class, that doesn't sound fair. You know, I'm already developing my relationship with Lakshmi Narayan and then I want to be more intimate. And so I asked, why can't I have more intimacy with Lakshmi Narayan? And then the answer was given that that particular form of the Lord does not permit that. That the function of Lakshmi Narayan is not to offer intimacy. If you want intimacy, then go to Krishna. Because Krishna is willing to accept anyone who wants him. He's so loving. But you have to want to worship him and serve him as the gopas and the gopis serve him. In other words, you must want to enter into the mood of his pastimes in Vrindavan. I wish I could do that. One time I was talking to one young devotee who had an addiction, which perhaps some of the devotees here have, for cricket. And whenever I would be talking to him, some philosophy or something, he'd get this very dry look on his face, like, oh dear, here we go again. Because he had heard a lot of philosophy and he had a very straight face, he'd go. And so, and then if you said cricket, his eyes would light up and he would become very animate. So I said to him, is there anything that you could have that would overcome your obsession for cricket? can you think of anything you would think is better than cricket? And he sat there for a long time and nothing came to his mind. So I said to him, just imagine, and we sat there and he was looking a little blank, and I said, just imagine if out in the front garden where we are, Krishna was there with his cowherd boys. And he was calling you, and he was saying, come, come, come. And you were to look up, and he said, let's have a game of cricket. Would you rather play cricket with him, or would you rather play cricket here? And he thought for a little while, and although he didn't believe it, he immediately said, I would rather play cricket with Krishna. So imagine if all the things that we think in this world, I love this so I can't go there, I love this so I don't want to go there, if we understood this, that all those loving relationships exist in their origin in Krishna, and they reflect pervertedly into this world, and not the opposite, that they exist in their origin here, and maybe I could do that. I can superimpose my reality of here on Krishna, but maybe he wouldn't like that, or I wouldn't like that. But this is the true understanding, because Krishna is the origin. Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. He's the Swayam Bhagavan, the origin of everything. And everything that we do is a perverted reflection of what he does. It's not the other way around. And when this penny drops in your mind, when this becomes like, oh, now I've figured that out, and it may take a short time, it may take a long time. It depends on Krishna and his mercy. But when that penny drops, then Krishna consciousness becomes easy. Not easy like easy, I can just do everything. Not like that. But your destination is now fixed, because there's no more reason to stay here, because this is just a perverted, shallow, meaningless reflection. Anything that touches me here, I'll get it there. You know when you go on a website and you see all these pictures and then they give you a little cart, you know, a virtual cart, put all these things in your cart and you take them, and then the thing, the item comes. On the website it's just a picture, but when it comes into your hand, it's a real item. So this world is like the picture, and when we understand this, then we want the real item, and the real item is available there. You have to come from here, practice here, do everything here, and go there, and there you will get it. And this is distinct from the Christian idea that you become good all your life, do good deeds, and you'll be happy in heaven, because that concept means I'm in the center in heaven as well. Heaven is for my pleasure. And if you ask, okay, what's heaven like? And somebody says, oh, heaven is like Sunday, one after another. You go to church, oh, no, no, I'd rather. There's one saying, I've forgotten, one of those famous American writers, heaven for climate and hell for company. So this is how people think. They say this and their people will laugh, but this is how they think. Heaven would be terribly boring. And hell is where all my friends are going, so I might as well go there anyway, because they'll all be there, because they're not going to change their lifestyle, so why should I? But this is all like ignorance. This is all contained within the darkness of the material nature. All of these concepts and ideas and beliefs that people live their lives by, these are the zeros that make a life useless. And where does the illumination come from? It comes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And what is the smiling face of Krishna? It is his Vrindavan pastimes. So you must hear this if you want to see Krishna's beautiful smiling face. And if you see his smiling face, then it's very attractive. And one starts to think, actually, he's quite beautiful. This will take time. So if one is thinking, as sometimes I think, oh, this is not working for me, this, I never get this together, then I think to myself, yes, that's true, but if it takes many, many, many hours and hours to become a pianist or a sitar player, do I think that this is going to happen within the next 30 years so I can go immediately back to Godhead and do what I want? This is an immature understanding of spiritual life. One time recently my husband was speaking to one very, very serious devotee. I think everybody knows in Mayapur, Jananivas Prabhu and Pankajangri, who are so serious and steady and strong in their Krishna consciousness. So my husband was speaking to one of them, and he asked them, what do you see, you know, when you finish this life, what will you do? And he said, I'll come back and I'll serve in the big temple. And then my husband said, don't you have a concept of like going back to Godhead? Because everybody thinks that. Wouldn't you like to go back to the spiritual world instead? And he thought for a minute and he said, of course, but beggars can't be choosers. So this is the mentality of an advanced devotee. Beggars can't be choosers. I'll go on with my service until Krishna makes the arrangement. And what is it that frightens us? Oh, I'll come back as I was at the beginning of my life. I'll have to go through all that again. I don't want that again. It was so painful. And fear arises. But we should think, no, I will do my first grade work, and next life I will go into second grade, and second grade will be much easier and nicer because I have rid myself of so many anartas, and therefore I should work very hard in this life to rid myself of so many anartas, because then next life they won't be there. And next life, my work of this life, I will be elevated to a more auspicious position, and more auspicious, and more auspicious, and then ultimately most auspicious. So these conceptions should be implanted, and the negative, fearful ones should be removed, because the negative, fearful ones will hold us back, and they'll keep us in the material world for a very long time. Now let's hear a little bit about these cowherd boys. I've underlined some little sections. This is a translation that one very nice devotee did for me of a series of lectures by Radha Govinda Maharaj, who's a very wonderful speaker on the Bhagavatam, but he speaks to the devotees in Hindi. So his nuances and his subject matter is not available to us as English speakers. So he's translating something, interestingly enough, as I was thinking where to talk about the cowherd boys. I remembered this, and I thought I should share something with you, because he has elaborated on this section just before Agasura appears, where the cowherd boys are playing. So if you excuse me, I'll just read some different sections. It's not joined as a story. We were hearing yesterday how the cowherd boys in the morning, they want Krishna to get up very quickly. So let us find that section. The cowherd boys were so attached to Krishna that if they had their way, they would spend 25 hours a day with him. When they used to return to their homes to sleep in the evenings after spending the whole day with their dearest friend, they didn't like to do it at all. One night felt like a universal kalpa to them. Sometimes the gopas would go to Nanda Baba's house halfway through the night, thinking it to be morning, and they would shout, "Oh, Kanaya! Kanaya! It's past morning, and we have to go to the forest and herd the cows, so let's go quickly. Actually, you're late." Yasoda Mai would wake up and angrily come out and scold them and say, "Is this the time to come? Can't you see it is still dark? Krishna is sleeping. Go home and sleep." But the gopas hated sleep. Even during the evening, after they returned back to the village, they would go to Krishna's house and keep talking to him, saying, "Do you remember what we did today? Do you remember this? Do you remember that? Do you remember how Madhu Mangal stole your flute? And you cried when we stole his food, and he ate it, and we ate it." And in this way, they would talk up to the point where Yasoda Mai would tell them to go home and let Krishna sleep. But how could they go? Because Krishna was millions and millions of times more dear to them than their very life and soul. And each day, they grew more and more attached to him. So is this not inconceivable? Eternal, absolute, it increases. Like when I was young, I remember asking my mother, I was trying to think of what it was like, what was after if you died. And she said, I said, "What happens?" And she said, "Well, you go to heaven." I said, what happens in heaven? And she gave me a picture that wasn't attractive. I didn't want to go there. You know, it was sort of eternal. You just eternally, what? You know, you just eternally be, like, and I couldn't picture being more than what I am now there. And why eternally be that? Better to go out and have some fun. But in the spiritual realm, you absolutely, it increases and increases. Krishna's love for Radha increases, and her love for him increases. Eternally, it continues to increase. This is inconceivable to us here in this limited space where things are limited and relative. If I have the microphone, you don't have the microphone. Everything is like that. So there's competition always for the resources in the material world. But the spiritual world is not like that at all. So, although they left, there was no guarantee they would not come back soon. Some suckers left, went to their homes, but in their extreme separation, time would not just go. So they would go back to Krishna's house half an hour later, convinced that it was nothing, it could be nothing else but mourning. They would stand outside his house saying, "Kaneya, it's morning, we have to go and herd the cows now." And again, Yasoda Ma would come out and scold them. For these suckers, suckers of Krishna, sleeping, eating, and occupation had no meaning. Such activities only brought them pain when Krishna wasn't there. Now, when they were going to the forest, they would steal each other's lunch bags and they would make jokes. And sometimes when Krishna was about to leave for the forest, his mother and father felt the same way. They didn't want him to go. So they would come to say goodbye to him, and they would, and Mother Yasoda would cry and cry, and her breast milk would flow, wishing out of love, maternal affection for Krishna. And Krishna would be there with his friends, and his friends are going, "Hurry up." And Mother Yasoda is thinking, "Oh, how can I let him go?" And she turned to Nanda and just said, "We shouldn't have him do this. There are strong, stout cowherd men who can take care of the calves. He should stay at home with me. You know, I should protect him, and he'll be hungry out there." And Krishna was like, "No, no, Mother, I'll be quite fine. I'll be all right. Please, you go home. You go home. We'll be all right." And the cowherd boys are thinking, "Oh." And so then she would again, she would take a few steps back, and Krishna would take a few steps, and she'd think of something else. And she'd come running back, and again she'd say, "Have you didn't have enough for breakfast this morning? You know, you're looking so thin. I have to give you something. Just you wait. And please don't go." And she would go through this whole thing, and tears pouring from her eyes out of her love and her affection for Krishna. And Krishna would talk to her again, "It's all right, it's all right." And he'd be ready to go. And the boys are sitting there, "Oh." And like this, 10 times, 12 times she would do this, because she didn't have anything else in her mind but Krishna. And she couldn't tolerate his separation, that she couldn't love him and feed him and fondle him and take care of him. This is the perfection of motherly love. This is the perfection. So when you see somebody in this world who has a very wonderful ethics and love, this is actually, according to Bhaktivinoda, he says, this is swagya ras, a heavenly ras, the wonderful things of this world. It's not Vaikuntha ras, or the taste of the spiritual world. It's swagya ras, because it is connected with this world. But when Krishna is the object, it becomes Vaikuntha ras, or the flavor of the loving exchanges of the spiritual world. So as soon as Mother Yasoda, somehow or another, she was convinced to go home, and the boys started off, and then the young gopi girls were there. And they were looking at Krishna, and they were thinking, "Oh, he's going to the forest. We will not see him. How can we live a moment without him?" And they had beautiful eyes, and they would give him sidelong glances. And Krishna would be a little smitten by the beauty of their faces and their shyness and their beautiful glances towards him. And through their eyes, they would pass him messages. And through his eyes, he would pass the messages back. And so the cowherd boys would watch all of this, and they would giggle and laugh a little bit, because they say, "Oh." And then as soon as Krishna leaves a little into the forest, some of the boys would imitate the girls and go, "Oh." And some of the boys would imitate the mother, "Oh." And they would start laughing at Krishna and teasing him. He'd be a little embarrassed, you know. And this was the intimacy of their love. They could tease him. They could make him cry. Sometimes when he was young, they would sit on the ground and they would build sand castles. This the acharyas tell us. And Krishna would build little villages out of the sand. Little children here do this. They go to the beach, they do this. Imagine if you could be at the beach doing this and suddenly think, "Oh, I should do this with Krishna. I should save my attention and do this with Krishna. I want to be with him." So everything here is like a mirrored reflection of there. Everything here, for one who wants to go there, they can see a semblance here of what they want there. But they know that this is only a semblance. It won't make me happy. I have to reserve my affection and attention for going there. I pursue my worldly activities. I take care of my family. I do everything. I'm not irresponsible. But my heart is dedicated. I want to go there. And if possible, my children should also go there. We should all go there. But if not, I definitely have to go there. Because my primary love is with Krishna. This is Krishna consciousness. So here, a little more about Krishna. We've heard this pastime. Sometimes Krishna would run to a distant place. He would go to look at some scenery and he would disappear off into the distance. And the cowherd boys would see, he's not with us, where is he? And then one of the boys would say, look, there he is, he's over on that hill. And all the boys would make a competition and they would see, they would say, I'm going to touch him first. And they were like young boys, right? Everything was competitive. I'm going to get there first. So they would all run to touch Krishna. Now, for those of us who have a little bit of kind of insecurity in our natures, we might think, oh, they'd all beat me. You know, they'd get there first. I wouldn't win. I'd miss out. You know, I'd be at the back. It would be a very painful experience. But no, Krishna's not like that. We will hear. Saying this, they ran to Krishna at an amazingly high speed and ran straight into Krishna's arms, giving him a very warm hug. Never before have we heard of such closeness between Bhagavan and Bhakta. This was a contest to see who would hug Krishna first. However, in that Adbhuta Dham of Vrindavan, no one can lose. Krishna made them all win by expanding one form for every gopa. The gopas would then ask Krishna after hugging him, Krishna, why did you go so far away from me? I was looking for you everywhere. And the truth of the matter is, because we may say this may be one-sided love, because in this world it's very easy to have a one-sided relationship. But no, as we heard, when the cowherd boys were stolen, that made Brahma's offense greater than Indra's passion, because he took them away and he missed the cowherd boys. So they said, why did you go away from me? I was looking for you everywhere. And the truth of the matter is that Krishna would go away from the gopas on purpose, just to give them the pleasure of hugging him. The desire to give someone a hug doesn't arise very intensely when the person is always near. This is the psychology of a hug. Distance makes the heart grow fonder. So just by listening to this lila, we are experiencing an emotional sense of attachment. So one can just imagine what the cowherd boys felt just by hugging and touching Bhagavan himself. If even a normal hug given in this material world to a material body feels warm and pleasant, so to hug Krishna, whose body is beyond our senses, would give someone pleasure beyond our imagination. The cowherd boys were so close to Krishna that they never used to hesitate or seek permission to hug him. They didn't even think like that. They wanted to hug him, they hugged him. They didn't hesitate to see or seek permission to hug him, to talk to him, to play with him, or to shout at him. This is because they never understood him to be Bhagavan. They never understood that. Sukadeva Goswami, through such descriptions, is showing the listeners that a relationship of such a close nature is possible with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And the aim of a bhakta should be to pray to Krishna to enter into such a lila once this life has ended. Yes, this is the aim. I wish that I could go there. And if one has not developed that sense yet, because we don't do that artificially, then one should hear and hear and hear and hear how he's the controller of the material world and dedicate all our activities to him and offer things to him. One should take up the process of bhakti. But this is the goal of that process, is when this desire arises. And sooner or later, whether we like it or not, this desire will appear within our purified hearts. So then I will read you another section. This is very funny. This is when the boys were playing. They imitated all kinds of animals. They imitated the frogs and they jumped in the water, and the monkeys, and they'd pull their tails and they'd make faces like the monkeys and so on. And they would dance like the peacocks, and they would do so many things, swing on the branches. They had so much fun. But sometimes they would come across a clear stream of water, and they would look at the water, and they would see in the water, very clear water, they would see themselves in the water. So they would see their own reflection. And they would think, because they were just young boys, that the reflection was a living entity in the water. And so they would say to the reflection, "Who are you?" And the echo would come back to them and say the same thing, "Who are you?" In great shock, the gopis would turn around and say to the other boys who were nearby, "Look, look at this person living in the water. I asked him who he was, and he asked me who I was." Hearing this, the gopis would all gather around that one gopa and have a look to see if what he was saying was true. So then the gopa would then speak again to his reflection, and he would say, "I'll give you one slap." And the echo would repeat this, "I'll give you one slap." Hearing this, all the gopas would laugh, but the one who was speaking would get very angry. The gopas would sometimes question each other and say, "Why is this person living in the water?" The suckers would constantly laugh at this leela. The echo would be coming from the stones near the water and not from the water itself. And Krishna, he would also play like this. Not only they played like this, he played like this. So he'd come down to the water and he'd look in the water and he'd see his own reflection in the water. So Krishna would sometimes say to his reflection, "Oi, which village are you from?" And the echo would reply, "Which village are you from?" Hearing this, Krishna would swear at his reflection after hearing the echo and say, "You are an idiot." And the echo would repeat back, "You are an idiot." Then Krishna would say to his reflection, "I can't believe I am tolerating such nonsense from you." And the echo would repeat, "I can't believe I am tolerating so much nonsense from you." And then Krishna would say, "Do you know who I am?" And the echo would say, "Do you know who I am?" And he would say, "I am Nanda Maharaj's son." And the echo would say, "I am Nanda Maharaj's son." And getting very shocked, Krishna would say, "Come out of the water and I will beat you up. I challenge you." And the echo would say, "Come out of the water and I will beat you up. I challenge you." And in this way, Krishna became very disturbed by his own speaking. Krishna would become amazed. Krishna would become amazed at the fact that this living entity in the water wasn't keeping quiet. But he just kept answering back the same comment in the same tone and the same pitch. The most surprising thing is that Krishna himself did not realize that it was his own reflection. He actually felt that the reflection was a living person residing in the water imitating him. This is the power of Krishna's Leela Shakti. So Krishna's Leela Shakti. Oh, so much crying. Krishna's Leela Shakti, his power to enjoy his Leelas, covers at his own desire, covers even Krishna. Because as we said, if he had not got the power to be amazed or angry or shocked or depressed or surprised, we have something he doesn't have. So he's incomplete, but he's complete. He's Purnam. Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Idam. He's Purnam, he's complete. Anything we have, he has. Anything you see here in this material world, it's there. So we would say, is there horrible, violent things? Yes. Every day a demon comes. And Krishna kills them. But they're not horrible, violent, selfish, crude, nasty like here. There are certain qualities, imperfections, that they're in the mirrored reflection. They exist there, but they exist in a different way. People here steal, they break into your house and steal your stereo under the influence of some intoxication. Well, Krishna breaks into the houses of the cowherd women, and under the influence of some intoxication, some sweets he has been eating or something, or his own pleasure, he will steal their butter and milk. And when they come to Yasoda and say he was in our house, he was stealing our butter and milk, he'll look like horrified that anyone would say such a horrible thing about him. He'll be so disturbed, he'll start to cry, and then his mother will look at him, and sometimes she'll think, I must chastise him, because when he grows up, no one will marry him. He does all these things. I have for his own benefit, I must chastise him. Or sometimes she will think, how could a little boy like this do all these things? You must have imagined it. Go home, I will keep him. And then she would tell him, don't go out of our courtyard. Everything is here. You don't have to steal from anyone else. I have sufficient butter. I have sufficient milk. Don't go there. And still he will go. And still he will steal. He was so naughty. But does his naughtiness make everyone angry, like a baby crying when you're speaking? It can make you a little irate when you're trying to concentrate. But when Krishna's naughty, it doesn't make anyone angry or irate. It fills them with deeper and deeper love. When we hear in the Dhammadharastikam that the Itidrik Svalilabhya Anandakund, Anandakunde Svagosham Majatam Akyapayantam. In this way, Krishna drowns the residents of Vrindavan in an Anandakund. We've seen a Radha Kund and a Shama Kund. There's also an Ananda Kund, a Kund of Ananda. They drown, they immerse in this by their dealings with Krishna. I'll read you one more. Roaming in the forest of Vrindavan, the cowherd boys used to carry pots with strings on it. Does anyone know that system? Pots with strings, how do you carry them? Yes, like this. A stick, and then on each side you have a string and a pot. And they would take lunch with them. And there were certain cowherd boys who did this. They were servant cowherd boys. And that was their pleasure, and their only service to Krishna was to carry his lunch. So they would carry like this. So they had plenty to eat. And Mother Yasoda at home was thinking, now we understand the psychology of when you go to an Indian house, for those Westerners like myself, and they want to feed you and feed you and feed you and feed you. And sometimes Westerners become annoyed, like, why are they doing this to me? They're feeding and feeding and feeding and feeding me, like force feeding me. Why do they do this? And the reality is that that's what Mother Yasoda does to Krishna. Every morning she feeds him and feeds him and feeds him. When he's finished eating, she says, you look so thin. Hardly anything. I made this specially for you. It's your favorite. Please eat this. And she brings Srimati Radharani every day to cook for Krishna. Even though she's married, this is a very special leela. And these leelas really can only be appreciated in Vrindavan Dham. When we speak here, people will say, of course not all of you devotees, but if you speak in a general way, people will say, how could she be married? Please explain this, I don't understand that. But when you go to Vrindavan, there's Javat, there's Nandagram, there's Varshana, everything is simple there. Somehow or another, it's all there, and you're there. And so somehow or another, it gradually you begin to understand. Maybe not at first, but gradually, because it's there, Govardhan Hill is there, you're seeing it. You can bathe in the Jamuna. To your eyes, it may be very contaminated and dirty flowing from Delhi. But actually, when you bathe in the Jamuna, what you see is not the real Dham, it is the Drishyaman Dham, what you can see with your eyes. But the Jamuna River's mercy is there for you when you go there. It takes faith. And therefore we recommend generally you practice sadhana bhakti for some time before you go to Vrindavan, because these stories are very nice, but when you go there you'll see rickshaw wallahs and advertisements and this and that, and people will cheat you for your money and so many things. You'll see something different and you'll think, oh, this is Vrindavan. What I'm seeing is Vrindavan. No, this is the very, very thin covering over the top of Vrindavan. It is what Drishyam, it is the Drishyaman Dham, what you can see with your eyes. But the Jamuna River's mercy is there for you when you go there. It takes faith. And therefore, we recommend generally you practice sadhana bhakti for some time before you go to Vrindavan, because these stories are very nice, but when you go there, you'll see rickshaw wallahs and advertisements and this and that, and people will cheat you for your money and so many things. You'll see something different and you'll think, oh, this is Vrindavan. What I'm seeing is Vrindavan. No, this is the very, very thin covering over the top of Vrindavan. It is what Drishyaman Dham. It is one of the features of Sri Vrindavan Dham. But when you stay there for some time, or when you come and go, come and go, come and go, and you develop a deeper appreciation, then you get little hints of what is actually there within Vrindavan. And by hearing, we can get an appreciation even while sitting here in New Nandagram. This is the power of hearing about Krishna. So, they would carry their pots of milk and other products, and they would also carry ropes that are necessary for cow herding and little sticks for controlling the calves, because Yasoda Maharshi didn't want Krishna to go out, but he said, I want to take the little calves out, the little tiny calves, little boy, little calves. And so they would take out the calves, and really the calves were quite fine because they would go and eat the grass. This was an excuse to play, and the cowherd boys would play out there. The cowherd boys would carry bugles and make loud sounds in case any calves and cows or cowherd boys happened to get lost. Certain gopas used to take flutes along, and while walking they would play beautiful tunes. And every so often, one particular boy's flute was stolen. This is the way boys play, right? You watch boys playing outside and they agitate each other. They really, right? Right? Who, me? Yes, this is the way little boys play. So they would steal another boy's flute. And one particular boy's flute was stolen very cautiously without him noticing. And as soon as it was stolen, one sucker would announce loudly, everyone should now play their flutes. The boy whose flute was stolen would hear this and he would start looking for his flute. And his flute wasn't there. In great anxiety, that particular cowherd boy would say, where's my flute? What happened to it? And the rest of the boys would say, how do I know? I didn't take it. And then eventually the gopa would realize who had taken his flute, and he would run after that boy. But by the time he got there, the flute would be thrown to someone else. And this would keep happening until he almost began to cry, being bullied by the others. So we can think, you know, if we had difficult childhood, we think, oh, more of the same. Oh, I don't want to go there and be bullied. But no, when the rest saw that he was saw this, they would laugh, and then they would give it back to him. Like this, many cowherd boys became victim to such transcendental bullying. Sometimes it would be for food, and other times bugles. However, the crying of the cowherd boy who was getting harassed was not painful. It was not like here. Everything there is not like here. There is at one time one devotee told my husband he has a mantra that he chants in Vrindavan. Nothing here is what it seems. As soon as he enters Vrindavan, he says, nothing here is what it looks like. It's not what it looks like. It's something different is going on in this place. Here, what you see is what you get. In the material way, what you see is what you get. In Vrindavan, nothing is like that. Everything is something more. So, they would laugh at somebody's pain. But laughing at somebody's pain is something that only happens in this material world. So when they laughed at the cowherd boy, he laughed, he found pleasure in his crying, and they would bully him in this way. Krishna was not an exemption to this rule. He would also get bullied. Krishna would many times cry and threaten and say, if you give it back to me, if you don't give it back to me, I will tell Mother Yasoda that you're all ganging up on me. So this is how Krishna's playing. This is topmost. We should know this very clearly and firmly. We should know what is topmost. What is the highest platform of devotion? And in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which Srila Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, he recommends It's one of the works of Srila Sanatana Goswami, and he says, everyone should read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita if they want to understand what is a devotee, what is Vaikuntha, what is Vrindavan, what is this, what is that, then you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So he recommends this book, and it has been translated wonderfully well by the devotees who live at Govardhan, in Gopi Paranadana Prabhu, who did all of the 11th, 12th canto translations. So it's a very authorized book, and it can give you some insights into the higher and higher and higher levels. So when we speak about higher in the spiritual sense, it's again unlike the material sense. There's higher, but there's no low. It's not like this is so high, we think materially. This is so high, so this is low. I am best, so they're less. No, there's best, better, and the most best. And they're all best. And Krishna reciprocates lovingly with all the bhaktas on all the various levels within the spiritual sky. And he's willing to reciprocate with everyone here within the material realm as well. And as we hear about him and hear about his descriptions of his reciprocation and apply ourselves, try to overcome the fear and the hesitation which comes as a result of the experiences of the material world that makes us think, oh no, more of the same. So we should overcome this with our intelligence. No, 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 it's not more of the same. This is transcendence. By very definition, it is free of all the inebrieties of this material world. They are all there and transformed. They're transformed into perfection there. They all, even the suffering of the residents of Vrindavan when Krishna leaves, becomes another form of transcendental ecstasy for them. Here, bereavement comes from loss. But there, a deeper and deeper intensity of love is the result of loss. There is never any loss for them. So this is what I wanted to present to you. And I think my husband, as I said, we have overlapped. Mm-hmm. He's presenting something very similar. Here's one last comment from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. As Krishna and his companions came out in groups from the cowherd village, they gathered around him. These boys were all fit to be his intimate friends. And the comment says, because the attention of the cowherd boys was never diverted to anything other than pleasing Krishna, the boys needed only to hear Krishna's flute to know that it was time to leave. It hardly mattered to them whether they had finished having breakfast or prepared themselves. If Krishna was going to the forest, they had to follow right behind. There was a great number of these companions of Krishna, and they naturally divided themselves into groups led by prominent boys. All the boys, however, all the boys were completely fit to be with the Supreme Lord in deep, close friendship. This is what we should prepare ourselves for in this life and in however many lives it takes to achieve this perfection. To enter into the loving, intimate pastimes of Krishna in one of the rasas, gopas, gopis, a mother, whatever you would like to perfect in your love of Krishna, make Krishna the object. And then you will become actually eternally satisfied. And nothing else. Believe me, you try it. You can try as many lies as you want. Nothing else will satisfy the heart. As Gopkumar, a little bit for a little while, and then another anxiety comes up. Every happiness in this world, by definition, carries equal amount of distress. If you don't get it immediately, you'll get it later. This is the laws of the material world. It is not the law of the spiritual world. The law there is different. Every unhappiness carries a greater amount of happiness there. But here, you cannot win. It's like a big casino. It's like a prison with a big casino inside. And you think, you get a little happiness, think, I'm going to try again on that. That worked well for me. But the house always wins. Any questions? Yes.
Mataji, you said that it might take many lifetimes in order to
attain this perfection.
But it's also said that meeting a spiritual master like Prabhupada, that's a very, very rare and special thing. So
yes.
But how can we be certain that we will meet our spiritual master and take instruction from him in each particular life?
Because Krishna arranges everything. And interestingly, he arranges it according to our desire. So if we don't have a very strong desire to meet our spiritual master again, if it was just a formal thing, kind of got us through a part of our life, you know, but it is, you know, not much more than that. Then of course this brings up many issues which we won't go into, but if that's the intensity of the desire, the fuel, the power in our heart, we may not, because we may or may not want to. But if we earnestly want something, Krishna will fulfill that. It's a very the nature of the, because he's there. I'm seated in everyone's heart. From me comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. We heard that already. I will arrange that. We don't trust him, but he's fully trustworthy. He will arrange that. Yes?
At the beginning of the lecture, you were talking about the cowherd boy.
Yes.
And whose nature was to see the Lord in a particular way. And that was the highest that which we saw eventually.
Yes.
Now this nature which you are talking about, is this nature inherent in the jiva since time immemorial, since the jiva ever existed?
This is a controversial subject, but as far as I think our acharyas, because I'm not a philosopher so I'm unable to go into this subject in a very authoritative way, but as far as I understand, something is inherent within the jiva and something is inherent within the sadhana. But ultimately, for a simple understanding, Krishna makes the arrangement because he's also inherent within the heart of the jiva. So he arranges where they go. I arrange the wanderings. Everyone is seated in Bhagavad Gita, he says, like as if on a machine. And I arrange that. So because we're not conscious that he's arranging everything, we think that I've got to make all these choices and decisions and I might make the wrong one. And then what will happen? I'll end up in the wrong place. But actually, when one becomes inclined, then Krishna does the rest.
Which means that people who are now taken to the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, to the Rupa Nuga Sampradaya,
yes.
The inherent assumption or the mood should be that yes, our nature is for Vrajabhakti eventually.
Yes, basically. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving Vrajabhakti. Conscious that he's arranging everything, we think that I've got to make all these choices and decisions and I might make the wrong one. And then what will happen? I'll end up in the wrong place. But actually, when one becomes inclined, then Krishna does the rest.
So which means that people who are now taken to the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, to the Rupa Nuga Sampradaya, the inherent assumption or the mood should be that yes, our nature is for Vrajabhakti eventually.
Yes, basically. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving Vrajabhakti. This is a fact. You read the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, you see it everywhere. He's giving Vrajabhakti. You see the different acharyas, there are four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas, and each one has a different flavor. And they're meant for a different type of person who wants a different type of result. Ramanujacharya, he's giving this Vaikuntha Ras. So if you go to Tirupati, you go to Kanchipuram, you go anywhere, you'll see Sri Angam, you'll see the worship is Vishnu, Lakshmi Narayan worship. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went to Sri Angam, he stayed at the house of Venkatabhata and he said, I have only one question for you. And he said, why is it that you're Lakshmi? She's supposed to be the chaste wife of Narayan. You know, she's there all the time serving lotus feet of Narayan. She's the most chaste woman. Why has she come to Vrindavan and do penances and austerities to meet Krishna? Why? Why does she do this? Run away from her husband to meet Krishna. And Venkatabhata, he was very wise. He said, my Lord, I think you can answer this question. So he explained his answer to this, that this form of Krishna is so attractive that even Lakshmi thinks, oh, he's so beautiful. But Lakshmi has an abhiman, a sense of identity, that I'm Lakshmi. So she can't, she won't be born in a gopa's family. She's the wife of Narayan. So she comes to Vrindavan, and if you go on Rajmandal Prikram, you'll see you come to Bailvan, where she lives, Bilvavan, and there she's sitting in a temple, practicing her meditation from time immemorial, meditating to enter into the Rasa Lila, which goes across, there's the river Jamuna, and right across there is Shringhavat, which is the place of the Rasa Lila, one of the Rasa Lila pastimes. But she can't cross the river Jamuna, because to enter into the Rasa Lila you have to be a gopi. A gopi means the son of the daughter of a gopa, a cowherd man. So her sense of identity is I am, you know, her I am is I am Lakshmi. She can't lose that. So this is a wonderful pastime, that she cannot cross the river. But for a very long time she practices meditation. And because she cannot enter into the Rasa Lila, then she prays to the Lord and he allows her to come as a golden streak on his chest, so she can be there. But her mood is different.
Which brings me to one more question, that we have traditionally before coming to the Lord Vishnu Sampradaya, before my introduction to this, I used to hear about the various saints of India, like in Maharashtra we have Tukaram and Eknath, and so many saints. They are all very elevated saints. Now and I always the conclusion was that yes, the Pushpa Viman came from Vaikuntha, and then they sat and then they went along with the Lord, either in the Vittal form or Vittal Panduranga or Narayan form.
Yes.
So
Vaikuntha, now, Vaikuntha Ras.
Yeah.
Yes.
So are these souls, are these elevated personalities still to realize something?
No. Just like Narada is saying, he doesn't pay me any attention. He's so busy with them. They must have some mantras. They put some curse on him. They've got him under their control. He's speaking in his mood, loving mood of ecstasy. But he's always Narada. But if he wants to taste that Vrindavan Ras, sometimes he wants to taste it, but his mood is Vaikuntha Ras. He travels here, there, everywhere. He doesn't want to not be Narada. Lakshmi doesn't want to not be Lakshmi. It's a Leela. So when he wants to come and he wants to take part, he takes a roop, a form, because he's Narada, he's unlimited in his power, and he enters as a cowherd boy or a gopi. But he stays for some time like that. Really, he's Narada. But he can do that. We can do that. If we understood our potency as a soul,